The AutJet Business Show is your gateway to expert business advice and real-world success stories. Each week, a different leader in the business world will share their tips, insights, and lessons, offering you practical advice to navigate your entrepreneurial journey. Whether you have a business idea or are just starting out or looking to elevate your existing business, the AutJet Business Show provides mentoring, inspiration, and invaluable networking opportunities to help turn your vision into reality. Ensure you get these transformative conversations live on Thursdays at 6 p.m. or find the podcast at highfm.com. Let's build your business empire together.
Welcome, welcome. It's that time of the week again. I'm David Zeidel and this is the AutJet Business Show. And I normally start by saying welcome, welcome, but tonight I'm going to have to say welcome, welcome, welcome. Because we've got Welcome Witboy with us. He's the founder and director of Bright Spark Foundation, and his life has gone from a gangster to a guardian. Welcome has lived a life that most of us can barely imagine. At just 12 years old, he joined a gang, a path that eventually led to him going to prison, where he spent 14 years behind bars. But what makes his story different and extraordinary is not only how he survived that world, but it's how he found a way to just leave it behind. Today he's the founder and director, as I said, of Bright Spark Foundation. He's a community activist, a mentor, and also a motivational speaker who works tirelessly to help vulnerable young people avoid the very life he once lived. Through partnership with schools, businesses, and communities, he creates opportunities for young people trapped in cycles of violence, poverty, and hopelessness, helping them find a very different future. He worked on school safety initiatives, gang intervention programs, youth development projects, and in fact, he even appeared in a film, The Forgiven. And that film was filmed in the very prison where he himself was incarcerated. I hope we get to the parts tonight where his story and he shares the raw, honest, thought-provoking, and deeply human lessons. It'll challenge the way we think about gangs. We're going to bring up the good and the bad. And yes, Welcome will share with us some of the good within the gangs, the crime, the communities, parenting, and the redemption. So I'll say again, welcome, welcome.
Oh, thank you, David, for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
I'm very happy that you're with us. But just before we get to the actual interview, I always start with a short little business story. And tonight's business story is around you are a winner no matter where you finish. This is, as I'm going through the sequence from my book, Life on the Run, this is chapter 5. And it's around, the book is based on running comrades. And you start off with a race where you know that you're definitely not going to win the race. You're not going to be the first person across the finishing line, but you still feel like a winner. And when I ran my first one, I think I finished about 5.5 hours after the winner had won. But there was no way that I could have felt that I was a bigger winner in any which way. And life is around, in your business and in your life, finding what you want to achieve and achieving it, regardless of how others around you achieve it. And that's the business story for tonight. And to get to Welcome's story, I need you to imagine in your mind's eye, what do you think a gangster would look like? Do you imagine him sitting with tattoos everywhere? Do you imagine him with many rings on all the fingers? Do you imagine he's got these chains around his neck? Maybe one of the chains has got this big dagger hanging around his neck. If that's what you're imagining, that's what's sitting in front of me. And before we get to the interview, I want to tell you how I met Welcome.
Yeah, please do.
So I was at a business school lecturing, and Welcome was attending the lecture. I think it was at Henley Business School. Mm-hmm. And whenever I start a course, I ask people about their lives, and Welcome explained that he came from a gang. And then I started asking more and more questions. And we went on this introduction even more and more. And some of the things that he shared, I thought, oh, wow. So Welcome, I want to get into that again. Mm. Of what is it about a gang? How do you get into a gang? And then we'll get what you're doing now and how you're helping people to get out of the gang. So if you can just start, at what age? Was it at 12? Was it a bit younger? If you can take us through your life of how did you get into a gang? What is a gang? And did you have an option?
Yeah, you know, I grew up in a town called Valhalla Park, which is on the outskirts of the Western Cape. It's a very colored community and very rife in gangs, drugs, and those types of social ills. You know, it's a country or it's a community just, you know, that has so many, there's a lot of poverty in that specific area. And then the choices that you have as a young boy growing up there would either be you join the gang or you get used by the gangs. And for me, I think my fascination with the gang started when I used to go to the shop and I used to see them standing on the corners, and also the kind of respect that they were getting from the community. And as a young boy, I mean, I grew up without my father. I grew up with my father working most of the time, not really spending time with me. So there was this sense within me that I wanted to belong somewhere. And I wanted the belonging with a man. I wanted to have this conversation with the man. I wanted to have this relationship where I can actually learn things from a man. And my father's absence actually just pushed me into wanting that sense of belonging even more, to the point where it just automatically happened where the leader of the gang just identified me and said, "I see potential in you." And when he said that, I was like, wow, not once has my father ever said that he saw potential in me. And that is when I actually got involved in the gang. And when you get involved in a gang, it's not like everything is advertised. So you know exactly what it means. You know exactly what is expected of you. So you get to learn as you say yes to some of the things. And then you also learn that there's not saying no to most of the things. So when they say we're going to rob, and you're like, okay. When they say we're going to steal, you're like, okay. When we're going to hurt, and we're going to do certain things, you fear saying no because you don't know what the repercussions or the consequences of you saying no is. But you do see those consequences in other people saying no. And you say to yourself that is not what you want must happen to yourself. So you just go with the flow. And then you just follow the rest of the crew. And because you consistently do what they ask you to do, you win credibility, you win fame, you win, as I said, credibility, and you start becoming more and more part of them. And the more you say yes, and the more you do what they ask you, the more points you get, the more you are trusted. And when you are more trusted, you're given more responsibility. So instead of jumping over a fence and stealing TVs and breaking into people's homes, you now get the opportunity to run a street where you now become a runner. You start selling drugs. You start peddling. You start doing all of those things. And then after that, you also start seeing that the more you do these peddling and you are successful in that, you become quite, they see you as loyal. And because they see you as loyal, you get more responsibilities. And so for me, that was how I got involved. Without even knowing that would be the depth of which I would have to go.
And what's the benefit? Because at some stage when I was talking to you beforehand, you said there is a benefit that these gangs provide. And I've always looked at it and thought it's evil throughout. But you said there is a positive side to it. What is the benefit and why do these gangs exist? What do they give that might be seen as good for the people in the community?
I mean, number one, there's no judgment. You know, they accept you for who you are. They don't judge your background. They don't judge where you come from. If you don't have a pair of tackies, they come together, they get you a pair of tackies. If you don't have clothes, they get together, they get you the clothes. There's a whole lot of uniformity. There's brotherhood. There's camaraderie. There's how do you feel? You know, there's those questions of we are one. So if one struggles, we all struggle. There's that type of, although some of these elements are false, but you don't feel like it's false because you know that at the end of the day, someone benefits from your pain. Someone will benefit from the hard work you put in because at the end of the day, you're not getting all the drug money. You're not getting everything. But what you do get is that what you're searching for, which, as I said, for me was that sense of belonging. So as long as these men played that role of making me feel like I belong somewhere, I was cool with what they expected of me. So there's all of those elements. And then the other thing as well is that you're also put into a space where you learn new things. I was fortunate enough that when I was there, there were so many languages that were being spoken. And I was fortunate to learn these various languages because it's men from all walks of life. And you start engaging with these men and you start speaking what they're speaking because you want them to understand you and you want them to understand you want them to understand you and you want to understand them. So you learn the languages. And so for me, that was the most amazing part because right now today I speak 7 languages and it was easy for me to interact on those languages because these men were from different walks of life. And I think that if I were just a normal boy growing up and just being welcome, I don't think I would have dedicated myself to learning what other people were doing and also a greater understanding of where they're coming from, their backgrounds. And so that is what I felt was the most positive parts of it.
And you told me that they also, if you join a gang, then they look after your family.
Yeah.
By providing food or how do they look after
you know,
your family?
Because you know that in South Africa, we have this 69% unemployment rate, especially with young people not having jobs. And even now we heard on the news that so many people have lost their jobs within this time. So people need to turn somewhere because nobody wants to be hungry. Nobody wants to suffer. So sometimes gangs become their option. And many people turn to crime, which I don't condone. But I say that sometimes people look at the fact of saying, I'm better off struggling when I'm with a group of people than struggling on my own. So they rather choose to join gangs and do the things that the gangs expect them to do so that they can have a loaf of bread, so that they can feed their families. So we have all of those things that happen within the pipeline.
So I want to now get into your life of, you explained all of this and you're having to make big decisions. You don't know their decisions at a young age and accept this world. But I want to hear your story, your specific story of what did you do and how did you progress through it and then land up in prison and what happened in prison. But we'll do that after the break.
The AutJet Business Show provides mentoring, inspiration, and invaluable networking opportunities to help turn your vision into reality. Let's build your business empire together.
Welcome back. You're listening to the AutJet Business Show. I'm David Zeidel, and we're listening to a slightly different kind of business show. Maybe it's the business of being a gangster. And Welcome was telling us how he got into the gang, but just explain to us, once you've been approached and you think, yes, I want to join a gang, take us through the process of becoming a gang member. And also you mentioned that you sell drugs. Who are you selling it to? Is it people in the community or out of the community? So first of all, you said, yes, you're going to join the gang. Mm-hmm. What is the process of getting into the gang? And you said you can't really get out. Can you get out of a gang once you're in?
No, definitely. There's like they said, there's the Vatas Locos approach where it says like there's one way in and one way out, and that's through death. So blood in, blood out. And I think to just answer your question, it's a situation of they test your loyalty, obviously, by giving you little tasks and seeing whether you will do those little tasks. And as you mature in those tasks, the tasks get bigger. And so your loyalty gets tested. But for me, at the age of 16, this is where I now had to show them that I was really loyal to the gang, and that is where you now have to take someone's life, because the ultimate loyalty is, can you take someone's life? And once you've taken the life, and let's say you get arrested or something happens, are you able to not snitch? Are you able to not tell that I was sent by someone to do it? And if you are able to not snitch, then that's the ultimate loyalty that you've really had towards the gang.
But why do they make it that you got to kill somebody to get into the gang?
I think for me, when I started understanding, especially when I started going to this program called Restorative Justice, that's the only time when I came to understand why they actually do it. Because it's that thing of the guilt of hurting someone to an extent where you take a life. You know, when you rob someone from their watch or you rob someone from their phone, you know that they can always get that back. They can work and get the watch back. But there's no way someone can get a life back. And not only that, but it's also a situation of saying that years of guilt that you need to live with, the shame that basically eats at you because you've done something so heinous that you yourself cannot bear to live with yourself. And you also know that once you've done it once, you got to consistently do it so that you can kind of like sustain that guilt. You know, you literally have to become animalistic and you have to lose your humanity so that you can actually be this person that they can consistently use for their own benefits and for their own nature of growing the gang.
So that's a control mechanism. Mm-hmm. So would you mind talking us through the process of, do you select the person? Do they select the person? Is it just random, or how do they choose who it's going to be? Do I have to fear walking down the street that I'm going to be attacked by a gang?
I think it is a choice that is made for you. You are given the weapon, you are given the target, and you cannot choose. They will choose for you. And the funny thing about the it's called initiation into the gang is that they will go with you. Two men will accompany you. And these two men also have weapons. And the ultimate process here is that if they identify your target and they say that's the person, it will be someone that is fragile. It will be someone that is vulnerable. It will be someone that cannot really fend for themselves. And they will choose the that type of individual. And they will send you to say, go and do that. And if you do that, and let's say you choose not to do it, then their mandate is then to do that to you.
So you either kill or get killed.
Or you, that's the, that, because that's the rule.
And you understood that.
And you understood that because they tell you that if you're not going to, we've given you your firearm, we've given you your bullets. This is your license. And if you choose not to do it, these men that accompany you will do this to you. And if not you, your family. So it's a situation of where I always say, damned if you do, damned if you don't. So I completely understand young boys and young girls that are forced into the gangs and they are given that choice. And that is why when we work with them, we try to get them out of the gangs. We understand the guilt that they have and they feel. The fact that I didn't want to kill David, but if I didn't kill David, I would have been killed. You know, so we need to work through that guilt first, work through that shame first, so that they can understand that ultimately at the age of 16, you did not have a choice. Mm. And how do we then work through that?
So I want to get to that part of it. But before we get there, I want to get through the process of how you get deeper and deeper into the gang and your personal story. Mm-hmm. So you went and you killed somebody.
Yeah.
And did you, until you joined the gang, did you ever think you would kill somebody, or did you just do it because now you had to?
David, no baby comes out of a mother's womb a gangster, a rapist, a psychopath. These are things that sometimes you get into a certain space and you join a certain group or you get influenced or certain things happen, your choices that you make because you choose. And for me, I never thought that when, you know, when you join the gang, you're like, it's just a crazy group of guys. Mm. They're all having fun and everybody's sitting there and they're like, just, you know, and you're like, they all demand the respect of the community. So it seems like all playing games, all fun and games, until you actually join and you see, but this is not fun and games. This is actually real. People are really dying. Lives are really being lost. Drugs are really being sold. Lives are really being lost. You kind of like realize at the end of the day when you are in it that I am part of the problem. And that is when you start to realize that is this really what you want to do moving forward? Because when you joined this, you thought it was going to be cool. It was going to be an in thing. But now you realize it's no longer about being innocent. It's about now real blood being on your hands, real lives are being lost in the process.
And did you end up going to prison because of this person you killed? Or just take us the process after you killed somebody. How long did it take until you landed up in prison? And was being in prison, did that continue, or was that the start of the redemption?
I think for me, it's you can't justify in your head that he was also a gangster, he was also a criminal, he was also... So you kind of like try to justify the killing. I went to prison because of cash and transit, you know, robbing money vans and all of that stuff. And then landing up in prison for those reasons, and also...
And how old were you when you went?
I was still 16 at that time. Okay. And I just turned 17 when I was arrested. And when I was arrested, I remember that day, it was my initiation, where I had to do something. And when I was faced with the choice of doing it, in fact, for me, it was different because I chose not to kill. I chose not to take the woman's life because she was pregnant at that moment. And I said to myself that if this is the choice that I have to make, I would rather not do it because this lady is still pregnant and she still needs to give birth. But because of me not having done that and still, you know, being in that space and being arrested by the police and being caught with the firearm and being caught with the guys, it was where these guys said to me, because you've done this, because you've given up and you haven't really gone through with the process, you got to say to the judge that we are not part of this. You got to take the fall. That was, again, me being naive enough to say, okay, cool, you have a point. Let me say to the judge that you are not involved, and therefore they then went, and then I was the only one that was then sent to prison.
And then how long were you in prison for?
So I remember it was on the 21st of November 1999 where I was sentenced to 23 years. And then from the 23 years, I did 14. And funny enough is that when I went into prison, I thought that the outside gangs are the same as the numbers gang. So imagine going into prison and the guy in front comes to you, two men, and asks you, who are you in prison? And I answer them, welcome, and the guy slaps me. And I realize that, you know what, I'm not welcome here. And then the guy next door to me, or standing next to me, also being that was shoved into the cell, being asked, who are you in prison? And he says, François Ntshonalanga, and nothing happens to him. And then I exactly say what he says and nothing happens to me. Not knowing at that moment when I said that, I was like saying, I am prepared to be a worker of the 28s. Because the South African system is 26s, 27s and 28s. And that's the system within the prison, the numbers gang. And despite or whichever gang you are outside, you cannot come in there saying I'm a Yaki or I'm a Dixie or I'm this. You only have those three choices. You either become a 26, a 27 or a 28. And if you choose none of those, you become a Frans, which means you don't want any business with what's happening in prison, but you will succumb to the pressures and everything that happens within. You'll be used. Things will happen to you because there's no protection. So many men in prison do not want to be without protection. So they choose to either be a 26, a 27, or 28. At that moment, Mina, I chose to become a 28 gang member.
And is there a meaning to those numbers, or is it just the name?
No, there's definitely a meaning. The 26s are like, how can I say, the distributors. They are the ones that sell, and whenever you need anything in prison, they're the ones that are going to give you that. The 27s are the ones that normally uphold the peace. They uphold the law. They make sure that everybody goes with what has been mandated by the 28s. And the 28s are the ones that, like, we call them the CEOs. I said the 27s are HR. The 28s are the CEOs. And when I rose to become a high-ranking gang member of the 28s, I remember I myself had a portfolio. I myself had a responsibility within prison that I needed to play, make sure that we made enough money. I need to make sure that we were the processes and operations within prison went well, that everybody got what they needed to get, everybody got it paid what they needed to be paid. So it's a business that you need to take care of. Hence, when you talk about how do gangs sustain themselves, they become businesses. They sustain themselves to buying into business enterprises and running those business enterprises like well-oiled machines.
So if I understand correctly, so you join and you become a 26, then you rise up to be a 27 and then a 28?
No, it's you become a 28, and from there you then rise up in rank.
Okay.
But if you're 26, you can't just automatically become a 28. You stay at 26 and you do your duties. You stay at 27 and you do your duties.
And how do you, when you join, is it just the luck if you're 28, 27, 26?
It's a dice. Mm. You don't know what it's like to be in those three numbers. You just need to throw the dice and luck will have it. But you do get men in prison that will say to you, join the 27s. They are much, you know, there's canvassing, there's lobbying, going in prison. Wow. All of those things happen. You are given an opportunity to say, like, okay, cool, which gang do you think would be, join the 27th because this is the benefit there. Join the 20 because this is the benefit there. Join the 20 because this is the benefit. So there's all of those things. Only when you are in, do you see, there's no benefits here.
Mm.
You know, you are the benefit. And then you realize that, you know, you've been hoodwinked again, but it's life.
Mm.
Nobody in prison has truth for you. So then you just go with the flow.
So you mentioned it's like running a business. Just mm-hmm. explain to me the businesses that are being run within the prison.
There's drug trading. There's human trading. We're talking about solicitation, selling of information. If David Zardel goes to prison today and he's in there for drunk driving and he's thrown into, his, let's say you get a 2761I, where you need to do 6 months inside. And then when you are, while you are there, you need things. You need toiletries. You need a blade. You need a comb. You need you need special shoes. These are the things that the 26 will get you. And a shoe outside will cost you, like, let's say, 400 rand. But if you get the 26 to get you a pair of shoes, it will cost you 2,000 rand. You know, it's always the market value for things in prison are greater. So if you were to pay a certain amount outside, because it's inside prison, it will cost you much more. And that is how the money is made. And from that, the 28 takes 75% of whatever the 26 sells. And that's how they make their money in various areas.
Wow. And how do people get the money in prison? Or is the money paid, you get the stuff inside and the money is paid outside? Or are you in your own cocoon?
Prison is a cashless society. There's no money in prison. So everything works through payments. You either pay the money onto a certain property, which is called Zama Zama, which is you pay into that account. And then if it's the 28s, they'll have their people that you pay the money into, and they will be able to recover the money at a certain time. So these are the processes. But prison itself, it's a no cash society.
So that's outside.
That's outside. You know.
And then how do they control the gangs within it? Is it the same as outside, where you're now forced to do things to prove your loyalty?
No, definitely. I mean, there's a hierarchy. You know, the number has a military gang hierarchy. There's a general, there's lieutenants, there's colonels, there's captains, there's sergeants. They've got a military structure. So everybody works their way into those specific structures. And when you get to the top, you are then able to make rules, make laws, and all of those things. And for me, when we talk about my turning point, was when I sat in the courtyard and I was listening to these men talking about killing and raping. And a question came to me at that moment where I thought to myself that if they were talking about raping and they were laughing about it, no remorse whatsoever. And I thought to myself, if I were to be a father one day, especially to a girl child, what kind of father am I going to be? And I also thought about it and I said that imagine if they asked my daughter, tell us about your father. What is my daughter's response going to be? Will she say, I am proud of my father for being a gangster? Or was she going to be disappointed to talk about her father? These are the things that I thought about. And for me, that was my turning point. That is when I realized that this is not the type of life I want for myself moving forward. And I've been in prison at that moment as a high-ranking gang member. I realized that I cannot serve in the system because it's either I die or I will grow old in this place. And that is where I decided to change my life.
And so you decide to change, but how do you physically change? Because you can't just say to them, listen, I'm no longer part of the gang, and you'd risen quite high. Mm-hmm. And before we actually get to that question, what were some of the hardest things that you, as Welcome, had to do in the prison to prove your loyalty as a gang member?
I think for me it was hurting other people within prison, stabbing, maiming, doing all the things that you did not want to do. Also where, you know, correctional officers put their lives on the line and you now having to take life and show them that if you want something and you're fighting for the rights of other offenders and they wouldn't want to give those things, is that they knew that they had to pay with their own lives. So it was that type of situation, because people don't understand that the complexity of prison is that prison is a different world on its own. What you see outside and what's happening inside prison is a whole different ball game, and it's not like the movies. There's no silver lining. It's once you are in there, you are completely on your own. You are completely, you know, you are accountable for your own life. You are responsible. So there's no The Wire kind of movie that you watch and say, oh wow, it's so nice in prison. People are watching TV. They're doing this. No. There's a whole lot of other stuff that happens. Even if you see on TV, when you watch the news and say, oh, these guys have got TV. That TV, in order to be there, someone had to die for that to happen. There was a war that had to be fought for that specific thing to be there. So it's a whole different ball game inside. Hence, I always say to people that I speak to young people and say that I wouldn't want you to go there, because your uncles, your aunts, people that come out of prison that tell you that prison is nice, they don't want to really tell you what's happening in prison, because they rather tell a story. Mm-hmm. Because they know that the minute you get in there, you may lose your life.
So some of the things that you did, attacking people, stabbing people, it's not like you wanted to do it to that person, but you had to do it as an obligation to the gang that you're in, and to rise up the ranks.
Yeah, like I said, nobody, I don't wake up, David, and decide that I want to hurt you, you know, especially if I got to know you and you got to know me. There's no thing in me that says do that. It is just that, like I said, it's that choice at that moment where you're at that moment. It's the same like a guy that uses substances. A guy that uses substances doesn't want to hurt his family. He doesn't want to wake up and say, what can I do to break my mom's heart today? It is the substance that rules him. It's that substance that says, you need to get me in your system or else. So he'll steal his mom's phone. He'll steal his dad's phone. He'll steal from the house. He'll break his sister's heart because he wants what he wants, because it's a habit. And the same with a gang. It's like you're in the gang and you know that if you're not going to do A, B, and C, these things are going to happen. So you try your utmost best to do that and to live that life so that you don't have to, you know, pay the price. Mm.
So we're going to go through, we've gone through what you've gone through, and then you said you got out of it. Mm-hmm. And for me, the hardest part, I think, is changing from a system like this and getting out of it. And I want to ask you, you mentioned a little bit how you change your mind to get out of it, but how do you do that practically? Mm. But again, we'll do that after the break.
The AltJet Business Show provides mentoring, inspiration, and invaluable networking opportunities to help turn your vision into reality. Let's build your business empire together.
Welcome. You're listening to the AltJet Business Show on 101.9 High FM. I'm David Zeidel, and we're busy talking to Welcome Witbooi, and he's taken us through the whole life of how he got into a gang, how he got into prison, the different gangs within the different prisons. But I think the hardest part is not getting in, but getting out. And you said that you sat the one day thinking in the courtyard, was it on your own? Did you have help thinking around these things? And then how did you decide to change? And then how did you actually change?
Like I said, it's like, you know, when you're sitting there and you're having this conversation, or they and you're listening to them having, as a high-ranking gang member, there's guys sitting with you. So you're never really alone. You always have this crew with you. But your thoughts are with you. So listening to them, it was at that moment that I thought. But what's interesting about being in the gang, and especially when you're high up, you make the rules. You write laws. You put those processes into practice. And so for me, it was, how do I write myself out of the gang? How do I bring about a law that will bring me to a place where I have to get other gang generals to sit and listen to my story and my reason for wanting to leave? And it's procedural that four other generals would have to sit in, and they would be called, and that would be the council. They would have to decide. And when you have those four generals and you're standing in front of them and you're telling them the reasons why you want to leave, they would then have to decide. And the two generals that are standing in front of you, they are the judges that are listening to your story and ultimately have to decide whether the two judges that are standing behind you, which are the executioners, they are the ones that literally have knives. And if they choose not to let you go, they have to stab you, same time in your kidneys, twist the knives and pull it out. But once you lay there...
So, sorry, just you decide you want to leave, mm-hmm. and you know that this could be the end of your life by just asking to leave.
By just asking, that's the process. Wow. By just asking, you need to take that risk. So you really, and there's no lawyer. You are on your own. There's no lawyer. There's no somebody to say, I'm standing in his defense and I'll speak on his behalf. You got to tell these judges. You got to tell these four generals why you want to leave. And these generals have to hear you. And when I was standing there telling them why I want to leave, like, you know what? I want to be a good father one day. I want to change my life. I want to make a difference. I want to choose education instead of this that I'm doing, because anyway, there's no real, you know, there's no outcome here. And me having to tell them that, if it does not make sense to them, then they will ultimately choose to say, you know what, thank you for your service, and then they will stab you and you will die. But something interesting happens when you lay there dying. If you're a 28, for 8 days, prison will be on lockdown. They will sing songs about you. They will sing praises about you. They will acknowledge the fact that you were part of them. And then after the 8 days is done, somebody else will take your position. So imagine your legacy just being 8 days long. Mm-hmm. Imagine. So for me, I was like, that's not the type of life I want for myself. And I remember going there and having to take that risk and believing that I am going to survive.
So you knew that you could die by asking?
I knew that I could die by asking. It was at that moment that I asked, that I was asked to step out of that circle, because the judges had to confer with each other. And the one judge called me back. And he said, welcome. Do you remember 6 years ago when we were at Drakensberg in prison? I received the letter, but you saw me struggling to read it. You took the letter from me and you sat next to me and asked if you could read it for me. And I said, yes. You read the letter for me and you explained what it meant. But you just didn't stop there. You also asked me if I wanted to learn how to read and write. You spent the next 4 months teaching me to read and write. Because of you today, I can read and I can write. And I did not know that this guy was going to be a general 6 years later.
Wow.
So for me, that was already divine intervention. It was already a way of seeing that, wow, I did not know that one act of kindness would save my life. Hence, I'm so big on an act of kindness, because you don't know who that act of kindness might change, or what impact that one act of kindness might have. And because I did that to that one individual, he could say to the rest, it's fine. This guy is a man of good character. Let's let him go. And that's why I'm here today.
Wow. And then you left the gang, but you stayed in prison for
mm-hmm.
a while.
Yeah, no, definitely.
And what was life being in prison without the gang?
So it was, I still had my ranks on my shoulders, which means I was still being respected.
When you say the ranks on your shoulders, is it tattooed in?
Yeah, it's tattooed on your shoulders. You have stars that are on your shoulders that they tattoo, and that's your ranking formation.
And you never leave that.
They can't remove, because it's inked on you. So you will always be respected for carrying rank. But I didn't have power to command, because right now I stepped out of that domain. So whatever goes on in prison, I'm not aware. If there's any meetings or any decisions that were taken, I'm not aware. I'm not consulted. That's the only negative thing about losing rank, because now anything can happen and you don't know what's happening. If people are getting stabbed left, right, and center, you don't know why they're being stabbed. You're just like, you know what, guys, I don't know. And standing in a position now where I'm completely neutral, I said to the head of prison, I want to start a school where I can teach other prisoners to read and write. And I met a guy in prison that was doing prison ministry, and he said to me, listen, I'll get you a bursary. And he got me a bursary, and I was able to study ABET, which was Adult Basic Education and Training, and I did my qualification in education. So I had a qualification to teach. And so I was teaching other offenders numeracy. I was teaching them, language and human and social sciences. And then from there, we started a school. And then instead of teaching them to be gangsters or being part of the number, I was teaching them to be to choose education as an alternative to being a gangster.
I find it fascinating that you taught numeracy in order to get people away from their number gang. So and then you came out of prison,
mm-hmm.
and you continued with this work.
Yeah.
Just take us through the foundation, which you call Bright Spark Foundation.
Yeah, and I came out, and then I realized that I wanted to make an impact. And I realized that I can speak to adults that are in prison. But I also realized that it was at the root level that this was happening. It was at school level. It was at primary school, high school. And that's where my work started. It was like, how do I speak to primary school learners? How do I speak to high school learners? How do I use my life story as a way to inspire them to say that if just because Welcome survived prison, it does not mean you're going to survive prison. Because these are the choices that Welcome had to make. Choices that he's not happy about. Choices that he still today think about. And so it was my journey of rediscovering myself. And so that the listeners can just get an idea. So I did this program called Restorative Justice, where he taught me to go back to the people that I've hurt and repair relationships with them, which was quite an amazing journey. Because some people did not forgive, and others forgave.
So when you said people that you hurt, was it the families maybe of people that you had killed?
Yes, definitely. It was having to go back to them and apologizing and having to say, listen, I'm here to present myself. I know that I cannot give back what I've taken. But what I can do is like there's a particular role that I can play in amending, making amends in that. So for me, it was taking that journey. And then obviously at that moment, applying and trying to get into a job, and then one organization saw my potential and gave me an opportunity.
Okay, I want to talk about what that opportunity was, but we'll do that after the break.
Cool.
The AutJet Business Show provides mentoring, inspiration, and invaluable networking opportunities to help turn your vision into reality. Let's build your business empire together.
Welcome back. You're listening to a different kind of AutJet Business Show tonight. We're with Welcome Witboy, and he was talking about how he got out of prison, how he started looking at things very differently. And he went and he talks to people and groups, and I know you've spoken to many schools and school kids in different areas. And in fact, today I told my niece, Romy, that you were coming, and she knew your name, and she said, he spoke to us. And she said, she asked you a question, and I think her question was, how does the life that you've had, does it affect you psychologically still today?
And I remember Romy quite well, because she made a great impression on me, because we even have a picture of us together. And I didn't know that she was family of yours. And it was at, I remember it was at the King David School in Victory Park that we met. And she's amazing. I think when we talk about the impact or the life I've lived at that moment, it is very different from the life I've lived prior. I mean, now that I have a daughter myself and being a father and having to walk a different path than the life I walked before, it kind of like shows me that I have so much to live for. And what restorative justice has taught me is that there's so many other ways to make it in life instead of hurting other people. Because what the gangs don't teach you, they don't teach you about the fact that when you take David's phone, that you've kind of like messed up his life a little bit. When you take his life, you've also removed a father, a grandfather. You've removed someone that a family cares about. You don't know that. What you know is that you just wanted what you wanted, that car, that cell phone, that money, that watch. So I was taught when I went back into the land of school, when I got to business school, I kind of understood the importance of education and why education for our young people, especially coming from grassroots, impoverished communities, disadvantaged communities, such an important tool. Because when I was in the gangs, education was looked down on. It was shunned. It was told to me that education is the white man's tool to oppress me. Only to realize that it was actually my own tool to liberate my mind and to allow me to think outside of the box and says, what's the possibility of doing it differently? You know, because you are taught to do things one way, but education teaches you that there's so many other ways to do things. And so my life has changed a lot. And then when I came out of prison, Sonke Gender Justice Network, which is an organization, said because they were fighting for human rights, they gave me an opportunity. They said, listen, you're welcome. You've done A, B, and C. You've accounted. You're walking your journey of redemption. Walk with us so that we can also learn from you and you learn from us. And that's when I started working within that program. And then after that, I decided that I want to start my own, where we can work with young people independently, teach them, train them, give them opportunities. And that's where we started connecting with community members and grew up. And then I met an awesome guy, John Foster Petty, that said, I want to give you a scholarship for the work that you do. And that's why, that's how I ended up at the Henley Business School until today. So for me, it started paying off, because I saw that doing good also has benefits. Being kind also has benefits. Being a good person without an intention has benefits. And that's how my journey is still going, and that's how we are progressing.
And you're dealing with other potential gang members who are youngsters today.
Mm-hmm.
How do you get them not to join the gang or out of the gang? And are those gangs okay with you persuading people not to join them?
You know, what I like about the misunderstanding people have about gangs is that there's honor. You know, they say there's no honor amongst thieves, but there is. Most of the gang members have children themselves. So you speak to that. Most of these gang members are fathers, are mothers, and they understand the importance of their children succeeding. And I always say to them, just because you chose to be a gangster, it doesn't mean that that should be the reality of your child. There is a way that your child can become different. It may be late for a 60-year-old to decide to change, but it's not late for the 15-year-old. It's not late for the 30-year-old. So we speak into matters of saying, I would like the 60-year-old to stop. But like they say, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. So I'll rather focus on the young ones that have the desire to stop and do something else. Because in our country, when young people don't have an alternative, we say leave the gangs. But the question I always ask them, what's the alternative? How do we take them away from the gangs? That is why we always, when we, even as Bright Spark Foundation, we go out and asking people for support. It's not that we're asking for the support to enrich ourselves, but it's to say we want to send these kids back to school. We want to educate these kids. We want to put them into programs at work. We want to make them better at you know, reliving and reinventing their lives, so they can become better citizens, responsible citizens of society, so that they can now give back instead of taking. And that is what we do. We say, what's the alternative? And the alternative is education. And that's why education is one of our most powerful tools that we use to educate young people today.
So you're saying you can't take somebody out if you're not giving the alternative. And you're saying education is that alternative.
Education is always the alternative. Nelson Mandela said it, that it's the greatest weapon against poverty, against anything that you can't face. If you use education, anything is possible.
We're getting towards the end of the interview, unfortunately. But just two questions. Do you see a South Africa at any stage that there won't be gangs?
That's a difficult one to answer, because we've been at this fight for such a long time. But I think that if our government can take responsibility and accountability at the top, because I think everything starts there. If the corruption can stop, if everything else can stop there, then it filters down to the rest of us, and then there's a possibility that anything that's negative can stop.
Great. So first of all, Craig's busy giving me the sign to wrap up, and I don't want to wrap up yet, but one last message. Any last message that you'd like to give to people who've listened to this interview and maybe been touched by the interview?
And a quick one would be that I just want parents to be more involved in the children's life, to know what goes on in the children's life, to be present and available, not just to give, but to also physically be present, because that makes a huge difference in a child's life. Because if that minute that parent is not present or available, someone else will be present and available.
Well, that's amazing. So first of all, before I thank Welcome, I want to thank Craig. I often forget to thank Craig, and he handles everything behind the scenes and tells us when we have the breaks and when to wrap up. So Craig, thank you very much for that. And Welcome, really, thank you for sharing your amazing story, and thank you for going through your amazing life. And for me, one of the key things out of this that you said is help others, because sometimes you don't know how that will come back to help you, like the guy who you helped him read, and at the end that basically saved your life without you even knowing that.
Definitely.
Thank you for sharing your message, but thank you for being you, and thank you for being here. I'm David Zeidel. This has been the Orchard Business Show.